What new horror is this? Wait a minute. Hands, feet. My God, even a penis. I'm free. Oh no, not again.
Davenport Ohula McMahon watched with bated breath as the phlebotomist pierced her supple veins and started to pump. This blood test will help us diagnose the problem, the phlebotomist said. Davenport scratched her arm. One of her veins wiggled. It hurts, she said. I can feel it writhing in me veins. There, the phlebotomist cooed. She scrunched up her piggy face in confusion as the IV needle failed to fill with blood. Let me just give it a little more elbow grease. She tugged hard on the plunger and, with a horrific schlooping sound, sucked from the lass's veins not the most crimson of liquid, that being blood, but a messload of wriggling black worms. The phlebotomist screamed, then turned to look at Davenport Ohula McMahon, which caused her to scream even harder because the black worms were dripping out of every orifice, even the ones cloaked by the paper gown her patient wore. They're wriggling, Davenport gurgled, worms dripping from her mouth like drool from a demented freak. Wriggling on the inside, and pretty soon they'll be wriggling in you.
Please let me go.
Why so hasty? Don't you enjoy the air and the sunshine up here in my evil aviary? There are more stories to read here, my friend. Many more before you are free.
Just don't put me back in the phone.
That's entirely up to you, my boy. I thought you needed to get back to nature, specifically the bird part of nature, so I let you out. Read the story well, and I may let you stay here a while. Read it poorly, and, well, let's just say my birds are hungry.
All right. Just give it to me.
Let me unfold my evil camping chair. They say a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. But how much value is a bird when it sees you as nothing more than an all-you-can-eat buffet?
Beaks. A boat teetered upon the cerulean waves like a gumdrop teetering on a tot's tongue. Every soul aboard was dead. A lethal bout of salmonella had feasted upon the sailors' intestines, just as voracious seagulls now feasted upon their corpses. The birds were ordinary gulls, those powerful squawkers normally found on the beaches of yore, but now they had a taste for human flesh. They pecked at the unfortunate former sailors, now just bones with shredded flesh waving in the wind for days. They just couldn't get their fill. They kept returning. Another beakful, another little, deadly seagull kiss. Fish survived by the school, happily swimming unmolested in the cold waves of the Pacific, as this macabre group of birds seeked out the only thing that would now satiate them.
People!
The beaches of San Diego were as lively as they always were. Sea lions howled beneath the apricot sun. Surfers rode the waves like flexible whales. Tourists lined the beaches by the thousands, cameras at the ready while their loved ones played jovially in the polluted sand. Gilderoy Cheesebro hated all of it. He stood on the shore, tossing the remnants of his disgusting French fried potatoes into the tide. He was only in San Diego because he was settling a divorce with his now-estranged college exchange program sweetheart in Japan, and he had to stop over in San Diego between flights back to Arkansas. His layover was supposed to be 2 hours. It had turned into 2 days. And now Gilderoy Cheesebro was trying to do the normal San Diego thing, which he rapidly realized he hated. His marriage was over. His ex-wife was in Japan, and he despised beaches. He also despised seagulls, several of which were now behind him, cackling at him for a taste of his French fries. He turned to see them, 20 in number, striding toward him like fat roadrunners. "Get out of here," he said, but they kept walking toward him. The leader, with a round gray chest, put Gilderoy's pants leg between its beak and started pulling. Gilderoy kicked his foot out to force it to move. With a loud screech, it backed away. Gilderoy thought he saw blood-red stains on the bird's feathers. But he didn't have time to take that in, because the 19 other birds were now upon him, grabbing his pants between their beaks. In desperation, Gilderoy emptied out his French fry packet, dumping them on the sand. Some landed right on the seagull's crowns, but they didn't want them.
"What are you doing?" Gilderoy asked. "What do you want from me?"
The seagulls kept pulling until finally, inexplicably, they had him down on the ground. Gilderoy grabbed an errant fry and threw it, trying to get the seagulls to follow, but instead they hopped onto Gilderoy's chest. Gilderoy screamed, but his screams were drowned out by those of the nearby sea lions, stinky and loud and harassing in their manner. With Gilderoy on the ground, the seagulls pranced atop his exposed skin. Then they started pecking. They dug into Gilderoy's arms as the most crimson of liquids, that being blood, blossomed from tiny holes. It felt like someone had taken a paper punch to him. Someone ran up with a towel and waved it at the seagulls like a matador waving at a bull, but the seagulls wouldn't move. Someone else screamed for help. Soon, a lifeguard and 100 beachgoers were surrounding Gilderoy. But every time someone tried to get the seagulls off, they flew at the helpers and started pecking them, too. Now, dozens of other seagulls with blood-stained breasts flew down from the clouds and joined the first batch in their devouring. The Good Samaritans were no match for the voracious birds, and Gilderoy Cheesebro was soon no more. Tonight at 10, a terrifying seagull attack on the beaches of San Diego, the newscaster said from the 10 o'clock news playing on the old TV screen in the rented Cold War-era condo. Pierre Caffé and his wife, Hildegard, shuddered at the words. They had just arrived in San Diego from Europe, and they were worried their vacation might get cut short due to these unfortunate circumstances. Pierre had recently retired from the French military after 20 years, and this was supposed to be a celebratory trip.
"I never expected killer seagulls,"
Pierre said with the kind of frown a person might make when a dentist informs them they've pulled the wrong tooth. "We don't know what this man, this Gilderoy Cheesebro, was doing to provoke them," Hildegard said. "I'm sure we'll be fine." Hildegard had to believe this was true. They'd spent thousands of dollars to bring their children on this trip. It had been on Pierre's bucket list for years. The run-down condo was already a disappointment. The San Diego Sun had made it much more desirable looking in the photos. But their trip would be great. Hildegard would be sure of it. Though the condo left much to be desired, it was steps from the sand. After the cafes breakfasted, the four of them walked right down to the beach. Pierre in his flip-flops, little Aggie with her arm floaties already inflated, tiny Beauregard with his boogie board, and Hildegard in the neon orange one-piece she wore to make sure she'd be spotted in case the family got separated. The waves were voluminous and surfers were already twisting upon them like the braided pastries the cafes had digested moments before. Though Pierre had expected a serene beach this early in the morning, the sand was covered in reporters and the mayor. There was a press conference going on.
"Have no fear," the mayor said into the camera with a bright smile. "The beach is open for business. What happened yesterday with the seagulls was an unfortunate accident. But it was just that. We have never encountered seagulls like this before, and we never will again. Our beaches are safe. And be sure to visit the local businesses along the boardwalk for 20% off your order."
The cameras turned away from him, and the mayor dropped his smile. Hildegard noticed he looked nervous, but Pierre seemed appeased. France, it was known, had nary a beach, and he was about to grab this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity by the horns and ride it down to Poseidon's magical kingdom.
"Great," he said. "Let's get ready for a day of beachy fun."
Pierre grabbed the children's hands and ran toward the water. Hildegard followed. Though the mayor had insisted the beach was safe, Hildegard couldn't help but notice hundreds of spiky poles that had been stuck into the sand at even intervals. They were metal and topped with what looked like pitchforks, seemingly to deter birds from landing on them. Hildegard shuddered as she watched a pelican fly down and try to perch on the tip of the fork. It yelped as the barb pierced its skin and flew back into the porcelain clouds. But this put her at ease. They would be safe from any seagulls should any try to land. She could enjoy a beach day with her family. Hours passed and Pierre's skin was already tomato red. But he and his family were having the time of their lives. They'd swam in the famous San Diego Pacific, cold as it was. They'd taken turns riding on Beauregard's boogie board, floating like balloons. They'd eaten their beach snacks and drunk their beach juices. They'd even found tide pools and watched the hermit crabs battle like tipsy boxers. They were just getting ready to head back to the condo for their midday meal when they saw a stampede of sea lions waddling toward them. 15 of them, black and tar-like, their odor spewing from them like fumes from a paper mill, were galumphing down the sand, roaring like offended hounds. Pierre knew they were running from something.
Family, hurry up, let's move,
he said, grabbing his children in his arms and prodding Hildegard along with the tip of the boogie board. They moved up the sand, out of the sea lion's path. But as they watched the clearly disturbed sea mammals move defiantly down the shore, Hildegard saw what was chasing them. A flock of seagulls.
It's those birds, she said, terror warbling through her voice. We don't know that, Pierre said. This could be any birds.
I like birds, Aggie said.
Me too,
Beauregard seconded. They wiggled, trying to get out of Pierre's arms, but he held them tighter, just in case. One of the seagulls darted out of formation and flew sharply down at the head sea lion. It started pecking at the lion's back. The sea lion wailed, shot up a flipper, and smacked the seagull out of the sky. The seagull stood on the sand, looking around, confused. The others stopped where they were in the air and floated for a moment, as if they were tied to the clouds with invisible strings. The concussed seagull called to its colony, and they all landed next to it. The seagull shook its head at the rest, as if the sea lion wasn't what it wanted anyway. The cafes and the other beachgoers, for now the beach was crowded with people, watched the birds with curiosity and a pinch of terror. Some parties gathered their things and backed slowly away from the large ring of gulls, for they had seen the news about the previous day's attack. A reporter left over from this morning's press conference tiptoed up to the seagull circle.
I'm being told these are the seagulls that attacked Gilderoy Cheesebro yesterday,
the reporter said. The cameraman got close, zooming in on the seagulls' chests.
I see blood,
he shouted. Sure enough, the seagull who was staring right at him had blood coating its feathers. Beachgoers screamed and ran for the local businesses along the boardwalk. Hildegard turned to her husband.
Pierre, we must go, she said. The mayor said it was okay, but he was wrong. Look at the murder in that seagull's eyes.
And Pierre did look at the murder in the seagull's eyes. They were black, like over-soaked boba, and its brows were furrowed evilly. Pierre never before noticed that seagulls had eyebrows, but this one's were impossible to miss. The seagull inched its webbed feet toward the reporter, who was preoccupied with her reporting.
Miss, watch out!
Pierre shouted at her.
You're ruining the peace!
The reporter shouted back, but she didn't take a moment to look behind her. For if she did, she would have seen the seagull lift its terrible wings and take flight. It was floating low, close to the ground, like a broken hovercraft, and it was darting right toward the back of her knees.
Run!
Pierre shouted again. Frustrated, she put down her microphone. But before she could make another move, the seagull darted at her popliteal fossa, knocking her down onto the sand. The other gulls were upon her in seconds. The cacophony of their evil caws filled the air, melding with the screams of nearby vacationers. The reporter's blood gushed from her exposed, now cratered skin, and one seagull shoved an old piece of bread in her mouth to mute her screams.
Hildegard, take the kids and go!
Pierre shouted, shoving both children into Hildegard's much smaller arms.
Mommy, what's happening?
Aggie cried.
I thought birds were nice!
Not all birds, Aggie, Hildegard said gravely.
Not all.
Hildegard turned back to her husband, who was now frantically looking around. The seagulls had moved on to the cameraman, now decimating him as well.
What about you, Pierre? Hildegard asked. Aren't you coming? I have to save them,
Pierre said.
I have to help everyone get out of here. You don't have to play the hero,
Hildegard screamed. There are many people who can help. But as Hildegard looked around the beach, she now found it quite empty. There were a few people left, mostly single parents with young children, trying and failing to gather everyone up, or tweens who were too terrified to move a muscle. The seagulls had their fill of the news crew and, like one giant gray cumulonimbus cloud, began flying over the beach, looking for their next meal, leaving behind two skeletons to be bleached by the sun.
I love you!
Hildegard shouted to Pierre as she locked eyes with a particularly angry-looking gull.
Be safe!
She blew a kiss to her husband and sprinted back up the beach toward the rental condo, hoping her husband would join them soon. It was then that Pierre noticed, not far from shore, a large rainbow-hued balloon floating up in the air behind a boat. Parasailers. He could only see their little feet floating beneath the balloon. The boat was turned now, heading for shore. The seagulls turned toward it. Pierre ran to the water's edge, waving his arms like a helicopter. The birds were flying in a deadly V right toward the balloon.
Stop! Pierre yelled. Go back out to sea!
But the boat's captain didn't heed his warnings. And all at once, the 20-plus seagulls flew at the balloon like a jet stream, popping it with their sharp beaks. The two people in the kite seats plummeted into the ocean with terrified screams. The now flat balloon covered them, and they flailed, trying to get out from under it. Finally, the people made it up to the surface, but they were immediately met by the birds. Pierre saw blood spurting up into the air like flying rubies as the birds pecked away. He turned his head, unable to watch anymore. But more screams, coming from behind him this time, made him turn his head again to the other side. At the Beachcomber restaurant that sat along the sand, a group of young adults were eating lunch. Pierre let out a sigh of relief. They weren't screams. It was laughter. A small bird had flown onto one man's stack of pancakes and snatched up the butter, flying gleefully away with its new, melty snack between its talons.
I hate birds,
the man said. The others cackled at him. But then Pierre saw another flock of seagulls darting toward the man.
It can't be,
Pierre thought, looking in horror from the flock in the water to the flock near the table.
Not more of them.
He watched as the birds stomped around the table as if they were dancing. Wine glasses shattered, plates were knocked to the ground, silverware clanged. Now the young adults were screaming. They backed away from the table, their brand-name clothes covered in food scraps. The man who hated birds tried to get away. But a seagull clenched its jaw around the man's ear and pulled him back in. He screamed as his friends yelled for him.
Joey! No!
Soon, the entire flock was upon him, pecking, annihilating. His friends ran away, unable to help him. Pierre couldn't help him now, either. Nobody could. But now there were two flocks of human-eating seagulls lurking above the sands. It was time for Pierre to act. He took a second to survey the danger, just as he had done in his time in the French military. For you can take the Frenchman out of the French military, but you can never take the French military out of the Frenchmen. Those foul would land any minute, attack more vulnerable people, and he couldn't let that happen. He saw three teenagers huddled beneath a beach towel, crying in fear. He knew that's where the seagulls would go next. He ran toward the teens as fast as his aging legs could carry him.
Run!
He shouted.
Go! I'll hold the seagulls off!
But they were too frightened to move. The seagulls, both flocks now forming one gigantic swarm, hovering high above the sand, got to them before Pierre could. One bird darted down and dove straight into one of the teen's overly gelled hair. The boy screamed as the gull struggled to find flesh. He swatted at it with his arms, but the other gulls went for the dermis as he'd brought them a meal on a platter.
Get off!
Pierre yelled, sprinting at the birds, causing them to fly up in confusion. Though the boy had a few beak marks on his limbs, he was still alive, and they would leave some pretty cool scars.
Run! Allez-y!
He yelled again, and this time the teens heeded his warning. They dropped their towels into the sand and ran as fast as they could toward the buildings. But now the seagulls turned their attention to Pierre. They zoomed straight toward his face. Pierre didn't run from fear. In fact, fear fueled him.
They messed with the wrong Frenchman.
He was still holding his son's boogie board, and when the first seagulls clotted his vision, he lashed out with the board, bashing it against the seagulls' feathers and flinging them away like fresh herb stems into a trash can. Several wounded gulls fell to the ground. With its herd at only half strength, the gulls paused. And that pause was all Pierre needed. He pulled one of the sharp-tipped metal poles from the sand and swung it like a great claymore. Feathers and crimson blood flew around him, swathing him in a gory bird tornado. He stabbed one killer seagull on top of the fork like a rotisserie chicken. a terrifying sight to the seagull's companions. Every beachgoer was able to get to safety, their tents, towels, and coolers littering the deserted beach like long-forgotten ruins. Pierre was in battle mode. He didn't think, didn't even breathe. He just swung, hit, killed. When no more birds flew at his face, he took a second to look around. The bodies of seagulls covered the sand. It pained him, this terrible vision, but it was them or the humans, and he was sworn to protect his fellow humans from danger. Pierre's own face was covered in blood, very little of which was his own. Feathers stuck to it, as if he himself was transforming into a seagull. One seagull remained on its feet, inches away. It looked mangy and evil, but like all of the juices had been sucked out of it. It held up its wing, showing pure, white feathers. Surrender.
"Why did you eat people?"
Pierre asked.
"If you had only stuck to tiny fish and trash, none of this would have happened."
The lone surviving gull walked to the waterline, where the sand was wet and malleable. It shrieked at him, then stuck its beak into the sand. It began to write, "People, good." And then it flew off into the sky, albeit slightly crooked, since it had some kind of wound to its shoulder. Pierre shuddered at the sight of those two words, "People, good." Surely the seagull wasn't saying people were good, not after he slaughtered its entire flock. So it could only mean one thing: people taste good. Should he have killed the gull, left no survivors? What beach would this bird land on next? Would it mate and teach its kin about the delicacy that was human sinew? It was too late now. Pierre had saved the people of San Diego, but he may have unleashed terror on the people of other beaches in other parts of the world. He would have to live with this.
"Pierre!"
Hildegard shouted, running down the sand toward him. He turned to her. Her face was obscured by the feathers that were blowing into his eyeline.
"You did it!"
she said.
"You saved everyone!" "I..."
He looked up at the now empty sky where the demon bird was mere seconds before. It was gone. He could only hope its injury was so bad it would fall into the sea and starve to death.
"I did,"
he mustered.
"Oh, I want to kiss you, but you look so disgusting,"
Hildegard said, grabbing him around his middle.
"Come back to the condo and clean up."
Pierre walked alongside his wife. He took one last look at the beach from his bucket list, but it didn't have the same appeal it always had. The sun looked dim. The sand looked ugly. He couldn't wait to get back to the French countryside, where the only water outside his window was a small man-made pond surrounded by verdant hills.
"I was thinking,"
he said to Hildegard,
"why don't we just go home?"
"I couldn't agree more," she said, picking a bloody feather out of his hair. The seagull soared above a brightly lit Ferris wheel. It felt like it had been flying forever. It was so much more difficult to fly with one injured wing, being pushed back by the ocean breeze with every inch. It couldn't wait to land. The beach near Santa Monica Pier was packed with revelers and fruit carts. And seagulls. Young ones, some without mates. Seagulls who would soon learn about a new source of food. Humans, ripe for the pecking.
Has this tale of man and beak changed your perception of reality?
Please don't put me back in the phone.
Answer the question.
Okay. Yes, now I'm scared of birds.
Tut, tut, tut. Such a shallow understanding of my rich prose. I'm afraid you need to go to timeout to think up a better response.
Where's timeout? No, please no. The newest model of that name brand smartphone. The folding one. What horrors lurk inside such a marvel of technological...
Such a pity. The school system has certainly failed the pitiful fools I kidnap and force to read and then analyze my stories. Oh well, here you are, birds. This phone belongs to you. This episode was performed by Jason Slavin and Lord Serpent. It was edited by Stacey Milbourne, Michael Morgan, and Lord Serpent. Beaks was written by Stacey Milbourne and Lord Serpent. It was produced by Stacey Milbourne, Michael Morgan, Charles Brock, and Lord Serpent. Michael Morgan and Lord Serpent were the audio engineers. The music was composed by Charles Brock and Lord Serpent. Tune in next week for even more evil tales of horrific terror. Be sure to follow me on Instagram at Lord Serpent's Library and check out my homepage at rss.com/podcasts/Lord Serpent's Library.